This is The Guardian.
Today, are the Tories really plotting to overthrow Rishi Sunak?
Today in Focus is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honour of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organisation, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat, but Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/earthday this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
In the year of a general election, the Prime Minister needs his party to be out campaigning passionately for him to win. But instead, it seems Rishi Sunak is having to win them back.
Rishi Sunak was scrambling last night to fend off a leadership challenge from a former cabinet minister who tore into his chances at the general election.
In politics, bitching and backstabbing are part of the game. But in the past few weeks, the signs that Rishi Sunak is losing the trust of his party have grown stronger.
Mr. Lee Anderson. A grand unveiling, a defector from the Tories.
Sunak says he doesn't care about the gossip.
Jealous. Look, I'm not interested in all Westminster politics. It doesn't matter. What matters is the future of our country. And that's what I'm squarely focused on. That's why I get up.
But he probably should, because there are MPs in his party that seem to be getting ready to challenge his leadership. Some are saying that if they want any chance of winning the next election, they might need to oust him before it's too late.
There was one report over the weekend about private polling, which suggested that the Tories could end up with fewer than 150 seats. I mean, that means them losing about half their seats that they have now.
From The Guardian, I'm Hannah Moore. Today in Focus, Rishi Sunak and the Tory plotters. Pippa Carrera, you're The Guardian's political editor, and you're in the House of Commons right now, so there's probably going to be a load of noise in the background of this recording. There always is, it's unavoidable. We know that the Conservatives have been behind in the opinion polls for a long time now, but how are people across the country feeling about them right at this moment? What are the opinion polls saying this week?
Well, I think the key point about this week is that there has been no closing in the polls. And depending on which poll you look at, they're about 15 to 20 points behind. And that shows no sign of budging, whatever Rishi Sunak seems to try. And I think that reflects a broader sort of firming up of opinion across the country in the Conservatives, that lots of MPs feel that the public have really stopped listening now to what they have to say, and that that narrative of the Conservative Party no longer being in control of events has kind of set in. And there's a sort of a sense of creeping fatalism which has emerged amongst Conservative MPs, that the election result is inevitable, that they will lose it. And really now the conversation that they're having is about how they can try and limit some of those losses rather than that they actually could ever win at the next election. And that all sort of creates this feeling of really despair amongst the Conservatives, not just amongst the backbenchers, but even people in the cabinet. I spoke to several cabinet ministers over the last couple of days about how they're feeling about it all. And it's really quite downbeat.
Yeah, tell me about that. You use this phrase, creeping fatalism. How are you hearing that coming through from the politicians you're speaking to in Westminster?
I'd say that in pretty much every conversation I have with Conservative politicians at the moment, there's an acknowledgement and a recognition that things aren't going very well. And there are varying opinions on how they deal with that. I mean, you have somebody like Ben Wallace, on the one hand, the former Defence Secretary, who came out earlier this week and said, look, we can't change the leader now. We just need to get on with it.
There comes a moment in time in the electoral cycle where you effectively put on your best suit, you stand up and you march towards the sound of the guns and you get on with it. Rishi Sunak is the Prime Minister. He set out his plan. He set out his idea and vision. And whether colleagues are happy with him or not, it's too late, right? Get on with it.
I mean, hardly a ringing endorsement of Rishi Sunak. And then, of course, all the sort of the mutterings about plots we've heard over the last few days amongst Conservatives, some of them quite senior, who are so unhappy with the situation right now that they're prepared to talk to people like me and other journalists about the options that are available to them. And those, up until this point, seem to include the prospect, remarkable though it may seem, of ousting yet another Conservative leader.
Which is pretty remarkable, given that we're very likely to be having a general election in autumn. And at this point, you know, they should all be getting behind their leader. What are the issues that they're criticising Rishi Sunak for?
I think the key one is sort of the failure to cut through to the public. And I think he had a moment when he took over from Liz Truss back in the autumn of 2022, where he could have done things like, you know, drop the Rwanda plan. The problem he had, obviously, at that point was that he didn't have the support of Conservative Party members. He was basically a coronation. So he felt restricted in what he could do. But what they've done since is kind of jump about. They've tried lots of different options and they've not worked. So when he first came in, he tried to present this image of Mr. Stability after the tumultuous period under Liz Truss, but that didn't seem to close the gap with Labour in the polls. So then they switched to him being the change candidate, very difficult to pull off when you have been in power for 14 years. And then they switched back to this sort of this mixture of Mr. Stability, bringing back David Cameron, but also doubling down on the Rwanda policy. And nobody quite seemed to know what he stood for. So this has all led to the situation now where they are still behind in the polls. And the Conservative Party is pulling in all sorts of different directions, unsure about what their leader stands for, and frustrated that Downing Street keep trying to switch course. The last couple of weeks has been a perfect example. The big announcement in the budget was the 2% cut to national insurance. And there's a world where Downing Street would have just doubled down on that, would have used every opportunity possible just to hammer home the message that people are going to be a bit better off as a result of their decisions. And instead, we've had a week where the government has struggled to get on top of a couple of scandals, actually. Both the Frank Hester Tory donor story that we in The Guardian broke last week, and then also the defection to the Reform Party of Lee Anderson, the former Tory vice chair.
If people have somehow managed to miss the news about Hester, could you just explain that?
Yes. So Frank Hester, of course, was the Tories' biggest donor, having given them £10 million in recent months and potentially another £5 million as well. He made racist remarks about Diane Abbott, the MP, suggesting that she made him hate all black women and that she should be shot. I mean, a really terrible thing to say, particularly in the context of some of the violence and threats we've seen towards MPs in recent weeks.
Is the Prime Minister proud to be bankrolled by someone using racist and misogynist language when he says the member for Hackney North and Stoke Newington makes you want to hate all black women?
Minister. Mr. Speaker, the alleged comments were wrong. They were racist. And he is now... As I said, the comments were wrong, they were racist. He has rightly apologised for them. And that remorse.
And then also his handling of the Lee Anderson defection, which lots of Tory MPs, particularly on the right of the party, feel could have been avoided if Downing Street had given Anderson a ladder to climb down. So it isn't even so much the inevitable ups and downs of British politics that are the problem. It's Number 10's response to them. And that, I think, brings back uncomfortable memories for some Tory MPs of the Boris Johnson era, where they ultimately felt like they'd lost a grip on the narrative. And there's uncomfortable echoes of that period for quite a few Conservative MPs who are questioning Rishi Sunak's judgment.
And you're seeing quite a lot of well-established MPs saying, I'm not going to be standing in the next general election. That obviously happens every time an election comes around. But already this time. The list is quite long. It includes Theresa May, the former Prime Minister, the most high profile of the names. You've also got Ben Wallace, Kwasi Kwarteng, Alok Sharma, Chris Grayling, among others, saying that they won't run again. Why is that?
I think you're right, it does happen every time, but it particularly happens at what people regard to be the end of political cycles. And the Conservatives have been in power for 14 years. And, you know, we saw a similar departure of senior Labour figures in 2010 after they'd been in power for 13 years. But it also, it kind of betrays their thoughts that they clearly don't expect the party to still be in power after the election, and that they're using this opportunity to get out, and in some cases to give up ministerial jobs, presumably to make the route to external employment after government that little bit smoother.
How bad is the party's position then, if there was to be a general election tomorrow?
I think morale is very low, and if the polls are to be believed, Labour could have a majority of 250, which would be astonishing.
Pippa, I mean, this isn't just about Rishi Sunak. It has been a chaotic few years in the Tory party. Boris Johnson was, of course, forced to resign. Then we got Liz Truss as Prime Minister for 50 days. And Rishi Sunak took over with the idea of steadying the ship. You reported on all of that chaos. How unified does the party seem now in comparison to how it was, you know, in the dying days of Johnson and Truss?
Well, I mean, it hasn't felt unified for a very long time. And, you know, there are definitely factions. There are still people that support Boris Johnson. There are still people that support Liz Truss. But there was kind of like an uneasy truce when Sunak came in, that I think that people from right across the party recognised that they needed to stick with him, that this was their last chance. You had high-profile figures on the right, like Jacob Rees-Mogg, saying it would be electoral suicide to try and get rid of another leader this side of an election. And yet that doesn't stop the jitters and the anxiety that definitely exists among Conservative MPs, particularly some of those who won their seats for the first time in 2019 and maybe only have a majority of a few thousand who are set to lose them this time round, about the leadership and the direction they're going in. And for some of those MPs, there's definitely a feeling that even if things are bad now, then the only chance they've got is having a new leader. And of course, I'd say though that they're in a minority, and that the majority I speak to, despite acknowledging that these are really difficult, dark times for the Conservative Party, thinks that they will only make it worse if they try and oust Sunak.
There are a few names coming up, aren't there, as potential replacements. Penny Mordaunt is probably the one being spoken about most. Tell me about her position.
Well, I think Penny Mordaunt's name is out there just now, not because of Penny Mordaunt, but because some of the supporters of her rivals are trying to damage her ahead of any future leadership contest. I mean, the prospect of any serious player thinking that it'd be a good idea to have another leadership contest ahead of an election, which even if it saved you a few seats, you would probably still lose, just strikes me as quite far-fetched. And I think a lot of senior Tories also hold that view. But she is somebody who has been painted as potentially being able to be a unifying candidate. But she's a Brexiteer who is also quite socially liberal. And she's somebody who, certainly when you speak to Labour politicians, because she's effective at the dispatch box, because she's smart and quick-witted, and because she's a good communicator, they're probably more fearful of her than they would be of her other main rivals currently for the Tory crown, as and when Sunak goes, Suella Braverman or Kemi Badenoch.
And Penny Mordaunt, of course, was in the leadership race against Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak. She did pretty well, but would you say that she's become more popular since then?
She doesn't have as broad a base as some of the other MPs. The right, I think, would be uncomfortable with her position, for example, on trans rights. And the left of the party, in so much as a left of the Conservative Party exists, would be potentially uncomfortable about, you know, her position as a Brexiteer. So while she definitely is sort of, you know, an attractive figure as far as the public is concerned, a dangerous opponent as far as the Labour Party is concerned, I do wonder whether she would be able to to get that sort of solid, broad base of support that's needed in the parliamentary party in order to get her over the line.
Because anybody trying to challenge Sunak at this point would need to have the full backing of the party, wouldn't they? There is no time for a whole new leadership campaign.
Well, there's an idea that there could be a coronation and that she could be the woman that would take that role, but that she would have to give up control of social policy in order to receive the backing of the right, which just seems, frankly, a totally bonkers idea to me. And I don't know why anybody would ever agree to that.
And Kemi Badenoch has been out doing the interview rounds this week. And in part, her job has been to quash this idea that there is unhappiness in the party and that people are launching leadership challenges. She said that there are one or two Tories who are unhappy, but that people shouldn't get obsessed with what she called the Westminster psychodrama. What do you think her position is at the moment?
I think she's playing her cards very close to her chest and she's being very publicly loyal to Sunak. When we heard her say earlier this week that it was only a couple of MPs and that everybody needed to unite and stop obsessing about the Westminster psychodrama. But privately, people in Downing Street think that she's up to something. I don't think that she's actively plotting to oust Sunak now. I think what's really happening here is that she has her eye on the Tory leadership at some point in future. But there's definitely some low-level campaigning going on. And there's been a few instances where she has kind of stuck her head above the parapet and gone beyond the Downing Street line, whether it's on the Post Office Horizon scandal or more recently on the Frank Hester row, potentially without getting the backing of Downing Street, which is the convention, before she speaks out. We did a story a few weeks ago about her being part of a WhatsApp group called Evil Plotters. Presumably it was ironic, but nevertheless terrible timing. But there's a degree of distrust in her amongst those around Rishi Sunak, who definitely think that because she's got her eye on his job, albeit in future, that she can't entirely be trusted.
And a more distant prospect, but people might have read that Boris Johnson has been eyeing up his old constituency of Henley-on-Thames if Sunak would allow him to come back. Would that even be possible at this point?
Oh, I mean, anything's possible. CCHQ, the Tory Party HQ, could jet in a candidate to any seat that it wanted where one hadn't already been selected. However, in real life politics, I think it is highly unlikely, so unlikely as to be virtually impossible, that Boris Johnson's going to make a comeback this side of an election. There's a very small number of his acolytes that think that he might be the answer because, of course, he is a great campaigner. But what they seem to forget is that his popularity ratings when he left office was at an all-time low and that he's no longer seen as being this charismatic, unifying, socially liberal force that he once was. Instead, he's divisive, he's discredited his party and he's damaged his country. And I think that the idea that Boris Johnson is the answer to the Tory party's prayers right now is really, you know, pretty far off from reality.
Coming up, what can Rishi Sunak do to get his premiership back on track?
In Norway, a woman's boyfriend forgets who she is overnight. In Detroit, a man is arrested, but he was never at the crime scene. In Spain, disturbing pictures of young girls have appeared, and no one knows who's behind them. Something strange is happening. A collision between people and artificial intelligence. Discover more in The Guardian's new series, Black Box. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes Monday and Thursdays.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Pippa, it's clearly a really risky time for Rishi Sunak. What is he doing to convince people that he's in control?
So this Downing Street operation, while it feels kind of quite capable, doesn't seem to have the political flair, possibly reflecting the fact that the Prime Minister doesn't have the political flair of some other leaders we've seen in the past few years. And that, I think, is a problem for him when, at a time like now, when actually he needs to show he's got the political nous, both just to keep his party on board, but also to try and turn about his fortunes. What he's doing, what his government's trying to do, is to focus on the economy. So we've heard promises from him this week that the economy is going to bounce back. And what they're hoping is that as inflation continues to come down, maybe mortgage rates will start to drop a bit as well. People's energy bills are coming down. They hope that enough people will feel better off enough to give them a chance at the election. But the problem for Sunak and the quandary he faces every day is that while, as every month goes past, the economy improves, so as every month goes past, does the Tory party become more ungovernable.
And Sunak's still trying to get the Rwanda bill through in time for the first flights to take off in spring. What stage is that at now?
So on Monday night, we had the first round of ping pong, where 10 amendments added into the bill by the House of Lords came back to the House of Commons. Every single one was defeated.
Right.
That now goes back to the Lords later today. And we're expecting them to focus on 6 or 7 of those amendments and try and put them back into the bill. And then it goes back to the Commons. The suggestion is currently that they might finish off the ping pong process after Easter, so delaying it by a couple of weeks rather than pushing it through before recess, which begins next week. But either way, it looks like the Rwanda bill will get through in its current form eventually. And then, of course, it's about what happens next. So it either ends up in the courts, or if it gets through and then the flights start to take off, and whether that sort of symbolic first flight is enough to restore Sunak's fortunes, or, as many Tory MPs fear, it's going to be too late and just won't have enough of an impact to shift the dial.
Well, how popular is the Rwanda policy with people who tend to vote Conservative?
Migration, and illegal migration in particular, is seen as being one of the key issues amongst 2019 Tory voters in parts of the country like the Red Wall that people voted Conservative for the first time. So it's definitely up there. And, you know, it's one of Sunak's 5 pledges that he made just after he took over. And while he is unlikely to have succeeded in stopping small boats, of course, the Rwanda bill is supposed to be a deterrent to that. The feeling is that if he can convince the public that they're on course to doing that, they're actually taking steps which will make a difference, then that might have an impact. I mean, I think given the thousands of people that are likely to be arriving in the UK regardless, even if flights do take off, I'm not sure it's quite going to have the impact he hopes it will. But it's, you know, it's one of those issues that in the run-up to the election, one of the few issues actually at the moment where I think there's going to be a real difference of opinion between Labour and the Tories. Labour, of course, say that they would scrap the Rwanda plan should they come to office and it would already be implemented. And I think the Tories will not only want to double down on that because it's popular with some of their core vote, but also because they see it as an opportunity to actually, you know, create dividing lines with Labour in the run-up to the election.
And what's he doing this week to try and appease the potentially revolting members of his party?
Later today, Rishi Sunak is going to be facing his own backbenchers at what's called the 1922 Committee, which is when they all sort of pile into a room, a wood-paneled room in the House of Commons, and hear him speak. And one of the sort of traditions of the 1922 Committee is that when the Prime Minister arrives, they all bang on the wooden desks. So we'll be standing outside assessing just how loud or how quietly they're banging on the desk and sort of interpreting that as a sign of support or otherwise for the Prime Minister. And I imagine that he will stick to his message about, you know, we need to stay the course, we need to hold our nerve. It's all about the economy. What's going to be really interesting is to hear how that goes down, whether his party just accepts that message and leaves, or whether any particularly disgruntled individuals after the last couple of weeks decides to stick their head above the parapet and, you know, and give their Prime Minister some home truths.
We've got the local elections happening across the country on the 2nd of May, which will decide not only who our local councillors are, but also regional mayors, police and crime commissioners, and members of the London Assembly. How much of a barometer will those be of how people are feeling towards the Conservatives at the moment?
I think that they will be a very telling indicator of public views on the government right now, even though, of course, they're local elections rather than national ones. And I think it's important to put it in the context of where we were 4 years ago, the last time that these elections were held, where the government was in a much better position in the polls and in public attitudes towards them. So the fall between then and now will be really, really stark. And I think they're set to lose hundreds of councillors right across the country. And that inevitably, that will spook Conservative MPs even more. Mm. And I think that if there is a moment of high peril for Sunak between now and the general election, that is it.
Before then, he's got the Easter recess. How helpful could that be for him in terms of re-strategising?
It buys him a little bit of time. And crucially, time when his MPs aren't stuck at Westminster every day, every evening, sitting out on the terrace, having drinks and sharing their dismay at the state of their party and its prospects. And if you can send people back to their constituencies, potentially you can take the heat out of any plotting. The flip side of that, of course, is that when they're in their constituencies, they will be speaking not just to the public, but to members of their local associations. Mm. And certainly all the suggestions are that Sunak is not hugely popular amongst Tory members right now. So they might also be hearing more sort of tales of woe from back on the ground, where many of their members will be out campaigning for local councillors in the run-up to the May elections and will probably be hearing quite a harsh message on the doorstep.
Rishi Sunak has, as you've said, rebranded himself several times. He came in as this kind of continuity candidate. Then last autumn, he was saying he was going to be a force for change. Now he seems to be going back to, you know, that kind of stability message. He'll be, as you're saying, hearing some quite harsh messages around the local elections. Do you think that in response to those, he would be able to and have time to rebrand himself again successfully?
I think if he rebrands himself again, it is a sign of utter desperation. You know, there is no world in which trying yet another different tack, I think, is going to work. I think their best chance is hoping that the economy improves enough over the next few months, that they are credited for that improvement in the economy, and that, you know, something turns up. And whether that something is something which boosts their own position or whether it's something which is damaging for Labour, I think they would view waiting a few months to give that the space to happen would be worth doing. So I firmly expect him to stick to the old, you know, strong and stable, stick with us, we've got a plan, don't go back to square one, all these sort of slogans that we've been hearing over the last few weeks. I just can't see a world where they get the support from their party or it has any traction with the public if they once again try something different.
Well, we'll wait and see. Pippa, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
That was Pippa Creerer, politics editor for The Guardian. She breaks a lot of exclusive stories, so you'll probably want to follow her at theguardian.com. And if you want more in-depth analysis of the Tory infighting and where the Rwanda bills got up to, you can listen to our sister podcast, Politics Weekly UK. They'll be talking about both of those subjects in tomorrow's episode. While you're searching for that, check out Black Box. It's our series about artificial intelligence, presented by my colleague Michael Safi. I know lots of you have been listening to it and enjoying it, and thank you for that. The final episode, which is out tomorrow, is asking, could AI be the end of humanity? Well, I flipping hope not, but let's find out. Search for Black Box wherever you get your podcasts. And that's it from us. I'm Hannah Moore. This episode was produced by Natalie Ktena, Lucy Hoff, and Nima Job. Sound design was by Solomon King. The executive producer was Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.